It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Many economists think the recession is ending, which does not mean the pain is ending for people out of work. If this recession follows the pattern of the past, employment will improve only slowly. And right now, the government says long-term joblessness is at its highest level since the 1940s. That means about 5 million people have been out of work for more than half a year. Some of them spoke with NPR's Frank Langfitt.
Jaime Pinner spent 23 years working as a cashier at a gas station in Maryland until he was laid off last year. Pinner has been hunting for work ever since.
I've been looking out around. Presently, when I get out through here, I go to some fast food company, try to see what I can get. Yes, I fill the application, but there is no job. And if it's any, it's part-time.
I met Pinner at Montgomery Works. It's an employment assistance office just north of Washington, D.C. Pinner is 59 years old. He wears a gray suit, lavender shirt, and matching tie. Pinner doesn't have a job interview today. He just wants to be ready. But most businesses aren't hiring. And Pinner doesn't blame them. He recalled asking the owner of a beer and wine store for a job recently.
He said, I would like to hire you, but look in my store. And it's true. You go in the store like ghosts. It's nobody, just because you're standing there, somebody's stacking some stuff for it. But there's no customer.
One reason people like Pinner have been out of work so long is because consumer spending hasn't recovered. Last month, retail sales actually dipped 0.1%, according to the Commerce Department. Until they see real demand, most businesses don't want to start hiring. Another reason people can't find work is competition.
My name is Brad Sakaris. I live in Bethesda. For the past 8 years, I've worked in wholesale mortgage lending.
Sakaris lost his job in March. He's at Montgomery Works today to get help on his resume. Have to ask you, are you one of the bad guys?
I am not one of the bad guys.
Sakaris insists he never dealt in subprime, but that hasn't made his job search any easier.
I've applied for, hundreds of sales jobs. I've kind of been blast emailing my resume out, hoping to get a response from anybody, and they're so overwhelmed with resumes coming through the door that they're, you know, if you don't have a standout resume, you're probably not getting a call back.
Andy Stettner says numbers like that are typical of today's labor market. Stettner is deputy director of the National Employment Law Project, which helps low-wage workers.
There are 6 jobless workers for every job opening. So it's a game of musical chairs that most unemployed workers can't win.
Such long odds are frustrating. Fred Quiroga is a research specialist at the Montgomery Works office. As unemployment drags on, some people are running out of their government benefits and taking it out on others. Quiroga recalled one woman pushing another out of the way to get to a computer.
The last month, we had to call the security guard a couple of times.
And had you ever had to do that much before?
No, before everything, it was completely different.
After the recession, many jobs will return, but some won't, especially in sectors that are going through structural change, such as mortgage finance, the auto industry, and high tech. That will make it even tougher for people to get back into those fields. Marissa Rivero is a software developer. In January, her job was outsourced to Asia.
We have a big office in the Philippines, and, you know, the hiring is there.
Where are you from originally?
From the Philippines.
Rivero came to the United States in the 1980s. She built a nice life for herself and her 14-year-old daughter. Now, it seems to be slipping away.
Well, it's hard to, you know, lose a job and restart all over again.
She's 50 now. Rivera worries her field may be passing her by.
Are you afraid at all that there may not be a job out there for you?
Sometimes, yes. That not the job that I want, because it's already outsourced somewhere in another country, wherein they are younger and probably more, quicker.
Rivera knows it could take months to find work. So she's exploring something new, a government job. In the toughest labor market in decades, Rivero says government work would provide what she needs most, stability. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Recently, there's been a feeling of, if not optimism, at least some relief about the economy. Unemployment stopped going up, at least for July. Average wages started growing a bit, And when the Wall Street Journal recently surveyed economists, a majority said the recession is over.
Not so fast. Today's stock markets fell hard in the U.S. and around the world. We're joined now by NPR's Adam Davidson of our Planet Money team, who's been trying to make some sense of the economic news. Adam, hey, how you doing?
Hi, Melissa. Doing great.
Where would you say we are right now? Out of recession, into recovery, somewhere stuck in the middle?
Well, the economic data is really, really confusing. It reminds me of last year. You know, the last, unfortunately, the last year or so, it's been pretty clear we're in a lousy, lousy case, where at least we're back to where it's not quite clear how lousy we are. There seems to be a couple stories emerging from the U.S. economic data. There is what seems to be the early days of an industrial recovery. For people who don't work in manufacturing, it probably doesn't seem obvious, but factories are humming again, at least a little bit, at least humming more than they were before. We're seeing more production, more big factories turning out goods. But the rest of the economy, retail sales, us consumers actually going out and buying stuff, that is still falling off. And until that comes back, we're not out of this thing.
Okay. And meanwhile, around the world, what's going on? Let's start first with Asia. What's going on there?
Well, Japan just peaked out of recession. They actually grew. I think a lot of people thought they would lag far behind us, but they did grow by a tiny bit. The big powerhouses of growth are China and Indonesia. They're really actually doing quite well, not as well as they were 2-3 years ago, but they really are growing, and they seem to be pulling Asia with them. And there are these interesting pockets of good news around the world. Latin America has some nice pockets, Brazil, Peru. When Germany just announced to, I think, everyone's surprise, including the Germans, that they had positive growth in the last quarter. France is doing even better than Germany. Poland's doing okay. Everywhere I've described is surrounded by other countries doing very, very poorly, though.
Doing very poorly. Well, that's interesting because we heard all the talk that this was a global recession all around the world, everybody feeling it everywhere. Would the same thing not apply in terms of recovery? In other words, would not everybody be lifted up at the same time?
You're exactly right. When this started, if you remember last September, October, and into December, it just crashed and everybody felt it all over the world. That is not the case with the recovery. I think we're going to see countries maybe months, even years apart in their recovery. One thing that's interesting is, on average, poorer countries, emerging countries, are doing better than the rich countries, than we are. That's very unusual. And we are going to see neighbors, you know, doing much better than the neighbors right next door.
Well, there are lots of ways, obviously, to measure where we are economically. What sort of indicators would you be looking out for, particularly to see if things are headed in the right direction?
I think that what matters at the end of the day, not just in the U.S., but around the world, is the U.S. consumer. China needs us to start buying again. So does France and Germany. So does Canada and Brazil. And certainly so does the U.S. economy. Now, obviously, we don't want to go back to the borrowing tons of money from overseas and buying houses we can't afford and filling it with junk we don't need. But it's a simple fact. If the U.S. consumer does not get out and start shopping, then our economy and the world economy will not fully recover. So really, at the end of the day, forget the data. Look at yourself, look at your neighbors, look at the store. That's where you're going to see the future of the global economy. How we feel about the economy is going to determine how the economy does.
Okay, Adam, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Melissa.
That's Adam Davidson of NPR's Planet Money team. You can find a lot more economic news at the Planet Money blog and podcast. That's at npr.org.
Support for Planet Money comes from Ally Bank, committed to straightforward banking. At allybank.com, visitors can compare bank rates all in one place with Ally's rate comparison tool.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says the economy appears to be leveling out. The news from Europe is even more promising. France and Germany announced this past week they were actually pulling out of the recession. But still, here in the U.S., consumer confidence fell, a sign, according to some economists, that our recovery might be weak. To look ahead at our economic prospects and look back from where we've come, we're joined now by Nouriel Roubini. He's a professor of economics at NYU's Stern School of Business. Professor Roubini, welcome to the show.
Pleasure being with you today.
You're known as Dr. Doom. You famously predicted our current financial turmoil, or the one that we might be coming out of. Is Chairman Ben Bernanke correct? Is our economy leveling out?
It's slightly too optimistic in my view. It's true that the economy is not in the same free fall that it had in the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year. But an analysis of the macroeconomic data from the labor market to consumers to the housing market suggested that we're not yet at the end of this recession. In my view, the recession is going to be over at the end of the year rather than now, and the recovery is going to be very anemic for a couple of years.
But we are starting to pull out of it now.
We are in the sense that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and this recession may be closer to the end by the end of the year than it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised at how quickly the recovery seems to have started? I mean, you were talking about a dire global economic pandemic, you know, lasting through 2009. That doesn't seem likely anymore, right?
Well, in my view, this recession is going to be the worst recession the U.S. has experienced in the last 60 years. Last year, the debate was among those in the consensus who said that this will be V-shaped, short contraction and rapid recovery lasting only 8 months, and those like myself and others who suggested it'll be more like a U, long, deep, and protracted and lasting 24 months. Now, we're already in the 20th month of this recession. Today, based on official data, it is the worst we've had by any standards already.
Let's stick with his letters theme for a moment, the U and the V. I've heard you talk about an L-shaped recovery. Can you explain what that means?
Well, 6 months ago, things were so bad that there was a risk that the recovery would be very, very flat, like the one of Japan that had practically no growth for a decade, like a near depression. That tail risk has been significantly reduced today, but my reading of the data is going to be slow growth for the next couple of years. And there is even a risk of a double dip recession, meaning something like a W. We're going to recover, and then towards the end of next year, we're going to relapse again in another recession.
Well, that's my question. I mean, the government threw a lot of money into the economy with the stimulus package and the bank bailouts. That required printing a lot of money. So, I mean, so aren't there potential consequences here? I mean, in other words, could what looks like a recovery now just actually be a short-term thing?
That's one of the main risks we're facing. On one side, we needed that monetary and fiscal stimulus to prevent the Great Depression 2.0, and we avoided that tail risk. On the other side, this stimulus was never a free lunch. Our public debt is going to double in the next few years. That's another $9 trillion of public debt we are issuing. And now we're printing a lot of money to finance this deficit so that interest rates are not going to go even higher. Now, that combination of large budget deficits and monetization of this deficit by the Fed could eventually, towards the end of next year, cause another recession.
So we could relapse.
Yeah, we could absolutely relapse. That's one of the big risks we're facing right now.
Professor Rubini, I want to get back to Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke for a moment. You have been critical of him in the past, but in an op-ed in the New York Times last month, you said he should be reappointed when his term expires at the end of this year. Why do you feel that way?
For a couple of reasons. First of all, in that op-ed, I recognized the many mistakes that Bernanke and the Fed did early on. They did not recognize the excesses in the bubble period. They reacted too slowly, and they didn't realize how much this would become a global financial crisis. However, there was a severe risk of a near depression, and somebody like Ben Bernanke, who has been a student of the Great Depression, realized that we needed to ease money, reduce interest rates, and do unconventional policy actions to avoid that kind of a risk. And that has been his major success. And that's why I believe he should be reappointed, also as a signal to the market, be a signal of stability and continuity to have somebody who has been successful to be reappointed to the Fed.
Now, you agree with 70% of economists on this issue of reappointing Ben Bernanke, according to the Wall Street Journal. Normally, you're an outlier. You disagree with most other economists. Are you uncomfortable now that you and 70% of economists agree?
While people usually call me Dr. Doom, I prefer to be called Dr. Realist. It's important to be right. we're closer to the end of this severe financial crisis, but I also recognize that there are many risks ahead, and therefore the exit strategy from this massive increase in the money supply is going to be very difficult. If the Fed does it too soon, and if we take away the fiscal stimulus too soon, we end up into another recession. If instead the Fed waits and the fiscal stimulus continues, large budget deficits and large printing money to finance them eventually going to increase inflation. So there is a very narrow path that can be taken right now. That's why Bernanke is going to have a very, very tough challenge ahead.
Nouriel Roubini is a professor of economics at New York University's Stern School of Business and the chairman of RGE Monitor, an economic consultancy firm. Professor Roubini, thanks so much for joining us.
Good talking with you today.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered, and I'm Melissa Block in Washington.
I'm Madeline Brand in California. Foreclosures keep rising even as the government tries to prevent them. That's according to new data this week from RealtyTrack. As the crisis expands, it's dragging down more middle-class Americans. Many of them are homeowners who've been paying their mortgages on time for years. NPR's Chris Arnold has the story.
Ronald Crochetier is scraping the grill at his corner diner and sandwich shop in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Thanks, Brenda. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
So you scrub down your own grill here every day, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those little guys on the corner. You know, I've been here for just over 17 years.
But with the recession, business has been much slower.
All fall and all winter and early spring, I just, you know, it was going down, down, down. Usually when it should have been busy, busy, busy. I mean, it's not as though I'm not able to turn a small profit. The problem is that it's kind of a small profit compared to, you know, what I've seen in the past.
Crochetier says he's taking home about $1,000 a month less. On top of that, his wife hurt her back and has had to cut back on her hours. She's a nurse. And for the first time in 21 years of marriage, the couple is having trouble paying their bills and suddenly can't afford their mortgage. A lot of other longtime responsible homeowners are in the same boat.
Is that sort of a changing nature of the foreclosure crisis?
That really is a change that we've seen.
We called up Michelle Jones, a vice president of Consumer Credit Counseling Service, which works with homeowners around the country.
We are talking with more clients who have never had serious financial difficulty before in their life. They've always held a job. They've always paid their bills on time.
Jones says there used to be a whole bunch of reasons that people were facing foreclosure. Divorce, costly medical expenses. Of course, many had gotten into high-interest subprime loans that they really never could afford in the first place.
And just plain old-fashioned overspending or a lack of education about budgeting. Those were often just as frequently the culprit, and not anymore.
Jones says in June of this year, the agency tracked the people that were facing foreclosure and calling to ask for help.
72% said that they were in the situation due to a reduction in income or a loss of employment. And that's huge.
Back in Springfield, Ron Crochetier's two kids are splashing around in a big inflatable kiddie pool in the backyard. Six-year-old Christina and five-year-old Mason definitely are not shy about showing off their pool skills.
I jumped right in the middle of the floor. It's really hard, and I don't even hurt myself.
Sandy Crochetier, Ron's wife, loves this house. It's not a mansion. It's a raised ranch worth about $200,000, though they owe about $250,000 on it. Since they're upside down like that, owing more than it's worth, some people say they should just walk away from the house. But they've been here 12 years, and the couple says they want to pay what they owe, and they just don't want to leave.
I mean, we've worked hard for everything that we have, and I grew up on welfare. I was the youngest of 10 children. We built this house. I mean, this is what we've always planned on.
Their biggest problem right now is a large home equity loan. The Crocheteers used to be able to afford it, but the interest rate is at 11%. Ron's been trying to get a mortgage modification to get that interest rate lowered. A lot of economists say for a lender, doing that to avoid a costly foreclosure is a good business decision. The Obama administration is pushing a program to encourage lenders to do that more.
Well, for that person, the president's mod plan is perfect. It'll work for him because he wants to stay in that home.
Mark Zandi is the chief economist at MoodysEconomy.com. He thinks that preventing foreclosures is crucial, and he worries that the president's plan doesn't go far enough. He'd like people to get more incentive to stay in their homes by getting the size of their loan reduced. The president's plan lowers people's payments, but it often still leaves them owing a lot more than their house is even worth.
There are a lot more folks who think that that just doesn't make any sense, and they're just not going to do it.
The Crocheteers lender, a company called Greentree, says it is considering a loan modification for the couple, though a recent report from the Treasury Department shows that Greentree has so far only modified 4% of its problem loans through the president's plan. Chris Arnold, NPR News, Boston.